the highlights and lowlights of 2007 through the eyes of our editors. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this special feature. Thanks for downloading us. Today, ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell and Managing Editor Rob Finfrock look back on aviation's big stories of 2007. We would have done this New Year's Day, but frankly, 2007 kept making news right up to the last minute.
The number one story of the year was the user fee wars.
I would definitely say so, Jim. It remains the topic of greatest importance to the largest segment of our audience, the GA community. And sadly, 2007, for all the hype and for all the bluster coming from the airlines, coming from politicians, and coming from the various enterprises within those two groups, in the end, we sure didn't see a whole lot of development on this. If I recall correctly, the FAA still doesn't have a reauthorization program in front of it.
No, there's no question. Not just that, but, you know, it was kind of sad. We put up an Aero TV piece this morning about AOPA's presentation on what was occurring in the user fee wars, and the fact of the matter is between October and now, not a whole lot has changed, which is a shame. We put the piece up not, you know, to prove that, but to show how reasoned AOPA's arguments were on this. And the problem to me for the user fee situation has been the phenomenal amount of Bravo Sierra BS that was put forth by various people with a dog in this fight. The problem is that, yeah, there's opposite positions here, but the amount of misinformation and petty nonsense that went on, frankly, drove me nuts. If I saw one more, oh, those big fat cats and their business jets are screwing poor little public and gonna put grandma's airliner in the poorhouse.
You know, the ATA's cartoons, though, I must say, were quite hilarious.
But they were also a new low. I mean, the problem is it was misinformation. It wasn't true. It was not based in fact. And the one contrast we wanted to put forth this morning with the Aero TV piece was, when you look at AOPA putting out facts, figures, details, quotes, and then
I'm going to be the little airplane nudging all those big airplanes out of the way with the cartoons. And so, give me a break.
Amen to that. Now, shifting gears a little bit to a truly tragic story that sadly was one of the top stories for the year. Labor Day last year, we learned that pilot, adventurer, and billionaire adventurer Steve Fawcett went missing over Nevada. And to this day, he remains unfound. We don't know what happened to Steve Fawcett.
Well, we know something happened. The problem is that somewhere, somehow, someday, a hiker is going to stumble over a piece of aircraft wreckage and a mystery will be solved. The sad part of all this is it was proof positive that even the mighty can fall.
Most definitely. And something that struck me about this entire ordeal, and something that I think the larger GA community can take from it, is you can never cover yourself enough when taking off by yourself in a small airplane over a desolate part of terrain. Let's face it, Fawcett had many pieces of technology that should have allowed him to be found, not the least of which was his own personal Breitling personal locator beacon. Even if the ELT on his Blanca didn't work for whatever reason, and that happens often in crashes, you would have thought that that very expensive and very advanced piece of technology would have allowed rescuers to hone in on him immediately. That is most definitely one of the unanswered questions of the year. How did that not happen?
Well, and of course, you know, ultimately, this was a guy who made us all look good. This
definitely
was an amazing adventurer who went out and proved that pilots are cool people, proved that pilots do amazing things. He stopped the world a couple of times. He made us all look absolutely wonderful by comparison. We owe him just this amazing debt of gratitude, and I would far prefer to have done so in person at some of the social events we were in the past able to see him at than to eulogize him. What a shame.
Most definitely. We do miss him, and many of us are still holding out the last shred of hope for a miracle in that regard. Changing gears to the commercial airline segment, 2007 oh my lord, saw a record number of commercial airliner orders. Boeing and Airbus should combine for at least 2,800 orders this year. And to give you some idea of how nebulous that figure is, I wrote last night that they should combine for 2,600. And I thought at the time that was an exorbitant figure. Boeing is set to announce this morning that it has easily surpassed its old record and will probably have tallied close to 1,400 firm orders this year. But Jim, I got to ask you, do you honestly think as we look out over the next 5 or 6 years, are all these airlines going to be taking delivery of all these planes?
Get your airliners. I tell you, get your airliners right here. Cheaper by the dozen. Get your Boeings. Get your Airbuses.
Well, you know, I understand Airbus does have a blue light special on the A330-200, but apart from that.
And such a deal I have for you on quantity discounts for A380s. Such a deal, Bubby.
Well, I think that answered my question.
Well, you know, and going from the ridiculous to the...
airline?
Let's segue here. How do you go from the ridiculous to the even more ridiculous? And the Cessna Columbia story. Cessna saved the bacon. Cessna came in, swooped in, and took what could have been the biggest GA downer of the year and turned it into something, thankfully, that was far more positive. But the Malaysian mismanagement of Columbia, this was a company that, yeah, had definitely gotten hit. Hailstorms, certification delays, thank you, Mr. FAA, so forth and so on. They got hammered, but they were selling planes. They were selling more planes than they could build. Production was slowly but surely working its way up. They had great talent, wonderful people pushing it, wanted the airplanes, tremendous, tremendous market support and increasing penetration.
And let's not also forget a fiercely loyal owner group.
Which in some cases outnumbers some small countries' armies. And, God, what a mess. Thankfully, Cessna came in, bought it for pennies on the dollar. It's one of those few times when foreign money wound up coming here and staying here. Yeah, hell of a story, an amazing story. Of course, it's a story that in 2008 is going to be wild to watch with Cessna's 350s and 400s, how that's going to compete with Cirrus. It's going to be a fun year, but I'll tell you what, it's nice to say it's going to be a fun year versus the way it felt last September.
Oh, most definitely, and it'll be sure nice to see what comes out of Bend, Oregon this year. Shifting gears a bit to another segment of the general aviation and to a lesser extent the business aviation community. At this point, I expected to see masses and swarms of VLJs in the skies. At least that's what the FAA told us.
Get your VLJs, I tell you. VLJs right here.
Well, Jim, that's the thing. We're only looking right now between the Eclipse 500 and the Cessna Mustang, the only two fully certified aircraft flying in the VLJ segment at the moment, even though Cessna doesn't call the Mustang a VLJ.
Oh, no.
We're only looking at about 100 planes total between those two in the skies right now. Is that an indicator that the VLJ segment is starting to falter a little bit, or at the very least may not be as robust as was promised just a few years ago?
Nah, not a chance. What it comes down to is a simple thing we call Cheops Law. Remember Cheops, the great pyramid builder way back when?
Okay, I'm Googling him as we speak.
Okay. There are basically two facets to Cheops Law. Nothing happens within budget or on schedule. So what it comes down to is this. It's been a tough road. You and I have both been to Eclipse. I've been to Cessna, flown the Mustang, which rocks. Darn nice airplane. Flown the Eclipse, which rocks, and more important, rocks for a lot less money. At least from my standpoint. I think that there is a revolution. Matter of fact, I know there's a revolution, and I think it's just biding its time. I think it's one of those things where it can't happen overnight. It's hard fought. Cessna has taken a far more conservative step, which works for them, and they're going to sell as many Mustangs as they can build, and probably have to increase production. I don't see why not. The owner reports on the Mustang are through the roof. These people love their damn airplanes.
No, definitely.
Eclipse, I mean, 100 and some odd airplanes the first year, and I've been there quite recently, and Little Birdie tells me there's some real big announcements coming down the pike very shortly. I think Eclipse will survive. I think Dayjet, which is the biggest indicator of how positive and how powerful the VLJ revolution can be, will survive and succeed. The initial numbers are not as good as their most positive reports, but they're a lot better than their worst. They're in the middle of the road, and they've already opened up to 28 locations. I think there is a VLJ revolution. I don't think it's going to happen quickly, but I think it's going to ramp up significantly in 2008.
Well, and of course, right now, the competitors that are dipping their toe in the water of the VLJ segment and bringing their own planes to market, Honda Jet, Embraer, and Piper with the single-engine Piper Jet, they're probably content to sit back and watch the early adopters not sell quite as many planes as they had first thought. It gives them a greater opportunity when their own planes hit the ramp. Now, Jim, we definitely don't want to continually bring this up, or maybe we do, but...
Sure you do, sure you do. Go ahead. You know you want to.
Well, you know, even I've started to kind of go out and start to voice my opinion on the FAA more and more, and I came into this thinking, hey, the FAA lets us fly, lets me fly as a sport pilot. I have no quarrel with them. A year has passed, and I got to say, I've hit my forehead against the wall on more than one occasion regarding some of their policies. Does the FAA simply not get it when it comes to general aviation, the importance of GA, and the fact that you can't tax it into oblivion and expect it to continue to survive?
You know, I'll tell you what, every time I hear the word the FAA, I kind of get this feeling. Remember Young Frankenstein when whoever, what's her name's name was mentioned, this horse would, you know, whinny in the background kind of thing. It's just this automatic reaction to FAA. I got three things to say about the FAA in 2007. They blew it. That's number one. Number two, the FAA does not belong to the airlines, and they need to quit acting that way. And finally, the FAA has got to get back on track. They've lost their way. They're leaderless now, but some think they've been leaderless for a while. The FAA needs to strike out on its own. It needs to be doing its job. And for God's sakes, it needs to get along with everybody and not just its treasured buddies in the airline world.
Well, it's worth noting, too, that he's not he's certified. It's worth noting he's not actually approved in the job yet, but Acting Administrator Bobby Sturgill actually does bring some experience as a pilot, quite a bit of experience as a pilot, to the job. If he's our new FAA administrator, do you think that might change the flow of the tide a little bit there, or do you think he's just too much of an FAA guy?
You know, boy, this one hurts, but honest to goodness, 99% of the people I meet in the FAA are really good folks, so being an FAA guy to me is not an automatic indictment of something bad. If he can do his job, if he's not being micromanaged from other areas within the government, if he has the courage to strike out and do what he thinks is best, he could wind up doing something amazing. But I'll tell you what, based on past performances, I ain't betting on it. The last FAA administrator that I thought was worth a salt only was there as an interim position. That was Barry Valentine, and God, I wish he'd come back and take the job.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. It's a new year. It's time for optimism.
Optimism? Now, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Now, 2007 definitely struck a particular segment of the aviation community very hard. 2007 was a horrible year for air shows. There's no other way to say it. It seems that every time we turned around, we were reporting on an air show accident. Almost always they were fatal. We saw a number of them personally, images that will stay with me for a long time to come. Jim, what do you think the air show industry can do for 2008 to reverse the tide a bit, to remind people and bring people in that, yes, this is a thrilling business, and we are running it as absolutely as safely as possible?
You know, I'm going to do something really, really tough here. I don't think they need to change a lot. They had a bad year, and sometimes statistically it all piles up in the corner, and that's what happened in 2007. If you look at the accidents that occurred, they all came from different types of acts and pilots and airplanes. There were no common threads. The International Council of Air Shows Convention, which just completed a couple of weeks ago, people were doing serious naval introspection. They were just sitting there, you know, looking off into the cosmos and kind of going, what else can we do? And the fact of the matter is, not much except keep doing what you're doing. They talked about a culture change. They talked about a lot of things. But ultimately, and this may be hard for the general public to believe, but for those of us in aviation, we certainly can see it. There is no more safety conscious a business than the air show business. I mean, that's an amazing thing to say. And I believe it. I know it. I work with these people. I know some of these people awfully, awfully well. I do not believe that the air show business has anything but safety first and foremost in its mind. And this year, we just got screwed.
Well, the level of self-discipline that aerobatic pilots and air show performers bring to their job, all you have to do is watch some of these guys go through their routine on the ground before they take to the air, talk to them after the routine, talk to them a week before the routine. They are thinking about flying, and it's one of the cruelest ironies that in a business that's so vigorously goes after safety in all aspects, to get hit like this, particularly, as you say, 2007, it piled up, and hopefully 2008 will certainly be a lot easier on the air show community.
We'll be back with a conclusion of our look back at 2007 with Jim Campbell and Rob Finfrock in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to today's Aero News special feature, our look back at 2007's big aviation stories with ANN editors Jim Campbell and Rob Finfrock.
This is certainly not a topic limited to 2007, but we did see our fair share of this. It seems that as the airplanes are getting smarter and the avionics are upgraded and more equipment that theoretically should make the job of operating an aircraft from point A to point B easier than it's ever been, safer than it's ever been, frankly, I don't see pilots keeping up their end of the bargain. And 2007 saw a lot of examples of pilots taking the controls of technologically advanced aircraft and managing to get into situations that, frankly, Jim, I'm sorry, I hate to say it, and it sounds almost cruel, they had no business being a situation that wound up costing them their life.
No, you're getting no arguments from me. What we basically have are smart airplanes and dumb pilots. I mean, that's a horrible thing to say, but the fact of the matter is this. The great majority of aviation and aviators out there are on their game most of the time, are conscientious about what they do. They want to train. They want to stay on top of their skills. But, you know, the old adage, aviation like the sea is terribly unforgiving of mistake and neglect and indifference. And part of the problem that we're having right now is that we can train a pilot so far until we have to put them in the real world. And in the real world, they're free to be as dumb as they want to be. Unfortunately, when they're as dumb as they want to be, they take good people and good airplanes with them.
It is sad to see, and again, 2007, even right at the very end of the year, it's happening way too often, and it's frightening. It really is. Now, there's a segment that's becoming increasingly prevalent, especially in military aviation, that simply removes the pilot from the equation, or at least the pilot
whoa,
from
whoa,
the cockpit.
Whoa, whoa, stop that.
The pilot from the cockpit.
We don't need no stinking pilots.
UAVs really came into their own in 2007. Yesterday, the military, or the news broke that UAVs accumulated over a 500,000 flight hours, primarily in the skies over Iraq. And simply put, why risk a pilot's life when you can only risk an airplane? UAVs.
Yeah, no. UAVs are a fact of life. Military, they're going to be far more a fact of life. Civilian, we've got police departments looking at them for everything from search and rescue to, God help us, traffic monitoring.
Eep.
Yeah. honest, your honor, the computer operator on the other end was having a bad day.
That's not my license plate.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, look into the video screen.
Now, of course, it's different when you have a UAV over a military battleground that you're likely not going to see many Skyhawks also flying those skies. But we're also talking about UAVs in the skies over major metropolitan areas. There are obvious concerns to address, definitely, as you say. And I'd say the verdict's still out on that. UAVs, as you say, are a fact of life, but how are they going to impact general aviation still remains to be seen, and there's a sensation crawling up my neck right now, you know, the hair standing up going, it's not going to be pretty.
Well, real simple, if UAVs are going to be in the NAS, there has to be a way that the environment that they're operating in, there has to be a clear line of communication between the operators of those UAVs and the controlling authority for that part of the NAS. If they're in controlled airspace, they need to be talking to controlled airspace, and everybody needs to be talking in the real world. I hate to say it, the ultimate solution on this is making sure that these guys are piped into the same freaks through landline or through satellite or whatever the case may be, so that if they're simulating the airspace that they're operating in, they certainly can bring in the communications environment. Excuse me, if they're working the airspace, they should be able to bring in the communications along with it, so that the only thing different between their eyeballs and their ability to communicate is the fact that they're doing it in a satellite truck a couple hundred miles away.
There you go. And finally, the number 10 story of the year, and I really hate to in any way berate NASA, and I'm not even talking here about the Lisa Nowak fiasco, and I don't think that's a strong enough term. I'm not talking about unproven accusations of astronauts flying into orbit when intoxicated. I'm not talking about
please.
The...
Oh, please. That's... give me my 10 seconds here. That story was one of the most ridiculous things of the year. I work with the astronaut corps on a regular basis. I know a lot of these guys and gals, dozens of them, and there's no way in hell any of that was going on. First of all, it's a very closed community. Nobody does anything in there without everybody else knowing what's going on. And if you thought the air show industry was safety conscious, you should see NASA. There's no way.
Oh, definitely.
That story was an abomination.
Most definitely. The last part of that thread is I'm not talking about NASA's mishandling of the pilot safety survey that they meted out at the very end of 2007 and provided absolutely no. here are the figures. Make of them what you will. We ain't going to help you. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about the agency's PR and bureaucratic blunders. A few days ago, I saw a headline in the general media that summed it up very well. NASA, great in the sky, bad on the ground. And one of the issues I see for NASA in 2007 that is going to domino effect into 2008 is the shuttle program. Atlantis is still on the pad over a month after it was supposed to be launched, and at the moment, NASA doesn't have a launch date set for the shuttle Atlantis, all because of four little sensors inside the external fuel tank. Now, That's the latest in a series of launch delays that NASA has had to work around and shuffle around for 2007, and actually since the entire program returned to flight in 2005. They are facing a brick wall deadline, September 30th, 2010. The shuttle fleet is retired. How the
ain't
hell?
Ain't going to happen.
Yeah,
ain't
going to
happen.
That answers
ain't
my question.
Happen.
It can't happen. There's no way it can happen.
No.
Now,
there's no snowball's chance in hell. Too big a job. Too many things to be done. And
too many commitments on the global stage to completing the International Space Station.
And on top of that, they cannot leave us without a launch capability for the time and the length that they're discussing. Now, granted, there are a number of great companies that will be able to fill the gap at some point. I've got great hopes for SpaceX. A lot of my XPRIZE buddies are salivating at the possibility of being able to do work for the government, and I think that there are wonderful alternatives there. But until Ares/Orion is man-approved and launch-capable and ready on the pad,
which is 2015, I believe, for manned operations.
Pretty much. The fact of the matter is this. The shuttle fleet, it needs to be maintained in some sense of readiness.
End of sentence.
Absolutely. Although, you know, one of the things I think people need to look at, though, is, you know, they look at the, oh, my gosh, it's still sitting on the pad. Well, guess what, folks? Space science is science. These are vehicles that are decades old, or at least the technology is. And while it's been updated, the fact of the matter is that these are not the vehicles that they were designed to be. Politics, several decades ago, gutted them then. We're dealing with that issue now. The men and women of NASA are extraordinarily dedicated. They're trying really hard. Yeah, they're not perfect. Who is?
Well, and Jim,
they've got a complex device that is just tough to maintain.
Well, and please don't misunderstand me, Jim. When I say that Atlantis is still on the pad, I certainly don't begrudge the space agency for taking a cautious approach. I just wish the agency would admit and get the funding for going before the public and saying, okay, in the interest of being safe, in the interest of doing this completely right, in the interest of avoiding a third accident in the program, let's say 2012, let's say 2013, it eases the burden on the space agency to wrap up a Herculean task ahead. And in all honesty, I think it would make the entire aerospace community breathe a little easier knowing that NASA isn't trying to fit everything in under the wire.
At least until there's a civilian component like SpaceX and the Falcon vehicles or another alternative that can give us some breathing room.
Amen to that. Well, Jim, I think that about wraps it up for the top 10 stories of 2007, and I look forward to talking to you in about 365 days from now regarding the top 10 stories.
And until then, I don't want to hear from you.
Jim, thanks a lot for your time.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what. Let me add two things here at the very end. First of all, thanks for your work. A lot of people don't realize that while there are a lot of people that contribute to ANN in so many ways and so powerfully, the heart and soul of the organization is Rob Finfrock, my quote-unquote second-in-command, or in other words, the guy who really does the work around here. And I appreciate your efforts continually in that regard and the fact that you keep putting up with my crap. And I'll tell you what, one of the things I'm really looking forward to in 2008 is Aero TV. It's video, it's features, it's news, it's the most innovative new media concept for bringing news, information, and other resources about aviation to the public. I'm more excited about this program than I've ever been in anything. It is the toughest thing we've ever undertaken. But it's possibly, I really believe this may be the most important thing we'll ever do. Watch our dust in 2008, folks. We've got some really neat stuff coming your way.
Happy New Year, Rob.
Happy New Year, Jim. And Happy New Year to all ANN readers, listeners, and viewers.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.